Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judith Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. I am extremely excited that we are ending our year with one of my most favorite couples who I have worked with. We have Nicole and Richard Wesley with us. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
And the reason why we have both of them with us is because this is going to be an exit interview. So this is a sub-series that I have. Exit interviews are people who have been divorced talking about their process, what they did well, what they wish they could have done differently, and how they approached the entire concept of transitioning out of the marriage, going into a divorce. And I don't think I've met anybody that has done it as well as you in the last few years. And so I thought it was extremely important to have you share your journey with the listeners, because I think your journey was the perfect journey. Doesn't mean it didn't have bumps along the way, but your approach is exactly what I talk about. I talk about going through the emotional divorce before you get to the legal divorce, because there are so many decisions in the legal divorce that if you're still processing emotions, will be very difficult to make. And that's when you can easily end up litigating. So I'd like to ask you some questions about background first. And the first question is, how old were you both? How many years ago did you actually meet and start becoming a couple?
Ladies
over
first.
20. I was 22.
Yeah, so 22. Yeah,
45.
That's probably
23 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes sense.
And then from that point, how long was it before you married?
We probably,
6 years.
It was 6 years. Yeah. We spent time, obviously, the coupling phase, right? Mm. And then we eventually moved in together. I had a place on my own, and then we moved in together with a friend, right?
Yeah.
It's so, probably about six
years.
Or some years of dating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so then when you made the decision to marry, were you clear about that? There were no misgivings, no inhibitions, nothing like that? You were very clear that this was the right next move? Or did either of you have a little bit of questioning at all? Because people do.
Yeah, I think Richard did.
Yeah, so my personality, regardless of the topic of marriage, it takes me a minute to process, and I need to be in a comfortable place before I make a decision. So the decision was the right one, but it just took me a little while to process and, you know, go through what I just not even risk mitigation, but I just had to think of all the scenarios. And then, I mean, once I did it, I was good, because I had to, when I bought the ring, as soon as I bought it, sort of a weight was lifted. I go, oh, okay, good. The ring was done, and I was ready. Then at that point, the ring's, you know, burning a hole in my pocket at that point. But yeah, so I had to go through my normal process in order to feel comfortable with it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. And how about for you, Nicole? What was it like?
No, I think I was ready, and I knew that Richard was going to be my soulmate, and I was ready.
You know, that's going to be an interesting next point I'm going to ask about in terms of soulmate. And so just another question before we get to that. Interesting that you said that. How long into the marriage before you had Cameron?
5 years.
It's 5 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was it planned?
Literally planned.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very operational.
Planned to not have kids?
Yes.
Within the 5 years, and then planned, okay, let's have a kid.
Yeah, the weekend was like,
this is the weekend.
Came to make rich. This is the weekend. This weekend is optimal. And it was that weekend that Cameron was conceived. Yeah, so it was planned.
Yeah, this is excellent. This is almost
down to the month of when she would be born, because I was in education and I knew I wanted to have her in May, so we could be off June, July. So it was very
your planned. Friend's very similar process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the marriage. So life goes on.
Yeah.
Now you're raising a daughter. And something happened. Mm-hmm. There was a point when something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I want you each to pick up with the story.
Mm.
what changed and who was the first one to recognize it and start processing and dealing with maybe there should be a change in your lives?
Nikki, go ahead.
I think in hindsight, you do a lot of reflecting. I think a lot of it had to do with just the stress of having a young kid, and we're both working a lot, and we're not spending as much time together, and you're just wondering. And I think I just started to have doubts about, you know, the depth of the love of our love for each other, whether or not Richard loved me. In my head, I was convinced that he loved me but wasn't in love with me. I couldn't get past that. I always think of marriage as like a flame, and that flame has to always be on. Sometimes it's on simmer, sometimes it's on high, but it needs to be lit like a furnace or whatnot. And I think in my head, the flame had gone out. And no matter what I could do, I couldn't get the flame back on. And so, yeah, I just had these doubts in my head about the bond of our marriage, and it was eating up at me, and I just felt like I'm too young to feel this way.
Did you feel similarly, or what was your experience?
No, I think very similar. Nikki was brave enough to say it out loud, which is not easy, to say that, you know, essentially, how do you feel about this marriage? You still wouldn't be in this marriage. And I knew that we had challenges, but I wasn't brave enough, and I wasn't going to say what Nick said. So when she said it, it starts a plan, right? And that plan has led us here into this moment. But I think Nick's right. I mean, there's a moment when we just did spend a lot of time away from each other. I was doing music. I was doing that a lot. And she was studying, getting her doctorate and going back to school. And we decided to have Cameron. We had Cameron. And we worked well together as friends in a functional household, maintaining. And, this is taken care of. This over here is taken care of. Very responsible. But we weren't a responsible sort of couple. Like, let's take time for ourselves. Yeah. Let's take a trip.
Yeah.
And let's go be romantic in this country or in this part of the U.S. We just never took that time. Our priorities became other things. It became work, became family, became finances. We didn't prioritize romance. We didn't prioritize essentially what separates platonic relationships from romantic ones. That aspect we didn't prioritize.
And it felt like, to me, it felt like we were roommates.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't fight. We didn't argue. Yeah. We always, you know, we like worked really well together. But, you know, I felt like, Richard was more of a roommate than a husband. Yeah.
Do you, this is so normal that this happens, though, because once children come into the picture, and especially if you're working on enhancing your careers and the educational background that it takes to move forward, when do you have time left? I mean, there's only so many hours in the day. Do you think that it was possible, looking back, for you to have prioritized romance with everything else going on? And or do you think you should not have moved your careers forward as fast? Anything like that?
I don't regret the career moves or the focus on, for me, I was going to school. I think those were all optimal. I think if I were to have any regrets, it would be more of not taking the time to try to work out these issues, maybe through some therapy or just some talking or just even taking more time to see if the feelings changed or evolved. But I think there was just a lot of confusion about what I wanted or what Richard wanted, and we just didn't communicate. In my mind, we didn't communicate clear enough.
Did you both find that you wanted different goals at a certain point for your lives?
I think the goals were aligned.
Yeah, it was just probably still have the same goals.
Yeah, we do have the same, which is part of the reason that we work well together even now and through the divorce process, because we have the same goals for ourselves. We have the same goal for our daughter, which is foundational. And I think one of the key reasons that we get along, besides we're just, I think, natural friends, still maintain, we go out and hang out with some mutual friends every now and then. But I think that's kind of one of the reasons that mm-hmm. we're able to keep it friendly.
Yeah.
So, Richard, mm-hmm. since you said that Nicole was the one who brought it up first, mm-hmm. and that is an act of courage. That is mm-hmm. so hard to do. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Very hard.
Well, hold on a minute. I'm going to pause. Nicole, what did you go through before you even brought it up? Talk about that.
Well, actually, my boss pointed it out to me. He said something to the effect that, and I was really offended by it, but then it resonated with me, but he said something to the effect of, you know, you're working so much, you're doing all these events, you're at all these events, because I was a high school principal. So he just said, you know, you probably need to go home and spend more time with your family. And all I can say is people who are working so much usually are avoiding their home. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? You don't know, you know, mm-hmm. I was very defensive, but I kept thinking about it. And I just remember driving home one night thinking, I make so many tough decisions in my working world, but I can't, and I have difficult conversations, you know, I've released teachers and disciplined teachers, but I couldn't have that same level of difficult conversation in my own personal life. And I realized that I needed to have it. And I just didn't like the way, I felt like I was just living a lie. You know, I didn't like the way it felt. But it was scary too. I mean, our daughter was 2.5. You know, it was really scary. I never wanted to get divorced. My parents were divorced. I think, you know, we had lifelong plans to be together. And I didn't necessarily at the time say I wanted to get a divorce. You know, I just was really confused, scared, didn't know what to do, probably depressed. So I just started by having the conversation, but it was definitely sort of like an out-of-body experience.
With that, mm-hmm. did you notice prior to Nicole actually having the conversation, did you notice any difference in her behavior that looked out of character to you?
No, I mean, it's a natural build. It was a build over time between her and myself, right, that we were growing apart.
Yeah.
But like I said earlier, I wasn't brave enough to bring it up, wasn't brave enough to say we should sit down mm-hmm. and talk about this part of our relationship. But by the time we started to consider having that talk, mm-hmm. Nick had already said, well, she had asked a question about whether I wanted to be in the relationship any longer. And then that just kind of started us down this path. But like I said, she was right to say it. She was right to ask because we were having difficulty. And, you know, come to find out, I mean, right now we're essentially better friends than we were a couple, as a married romantic couple. So that's kind of just where we headed. But it was a slow go. Certainly, I think it has taken us from the time that she made that statement to this day. It's been, what, 7 years.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What was that journey like? So this is December of 2020. Mm-hmm. About when did that talk happen?
It was like 7 years ago. It was like
2012 or 13.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. So you had the talk and you had a 2.5-year-old daughter at the time.
Uh-huh.
What did you do after you had the talk? There are these grief stages that people go through. How did you emotionally go through?
I just wanted to see. So I mean, ultimately I moved out, but I wanted to see if, I was really confused. I did want to go to therapy. Mm-hmm. Richard said he would go if it was about working on the marriage. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's going to be the outcome. Mm-hmm. I want us to go to therapy to see if that would be, but I couldn't guarantee that that was going to be the outcome. I was just really confused mm-hmm. about my feelings. And I wish I had had a crystal ball. And I thought, am I having a midlife crisis? And this will like just hang in there and it'll get better. Or am I... Do I really feel this way? And I'm young, so might as well just move on now. And maybe at some point I'd meet someone else. And, you know, so I just didn't know. So I said, hey, what if I get an apartment and move out for a year? And let's just see if, you know, the feelings change and things get better.
Okay. Sounds reasonable.
Uh-huh.
And you were okay with that, obviously, Richard, or no?
I wasn't okay with it. Like, I was celebrating. but we're both, I mean, Nick and I are both rational people, right?
Yeah.
And we realized that someone is having a rational challenge, because I'm feeling it personally too, just like she is. So I think that the idea that she would move out is not some irrational step. So yeah, it makes sense. It was a part of our relationship that was operationalized. It was efficient and effective, and we could communicate back and forth. So this transition was no different. And so going through all those emotions, like, okay, we can do this first. But what's interesting is, you know, leading up to that, we essentially were having, we had a life that was, we coexisted inside a house, but we lived two separate lives. So it could be, if I look back on it, maybe having her move out, it didn't necessarily change our life that much. Nikki had, I think, more change, because she had to physically leave the space. She physically left the space. But I stayed in the space. And then we kind of continued to co-parent, continue to work together, but we just were separate now physically, because emotionally we were separate. And then during that transition, obviously, we had the dialogue that Nick talked about in terms of going to therapy. Why would we go to therapy? Do we need therapy? Should we pay for therapy? You know, we can figure this out on our own. No, maybe we can't, right? So you go through that. And obviously in there too, we have to share with family and friends that it's happening. And I don't know if we're going to get to that question. That was tough.
Please talk about it.
Yeah, because their responses were not, I did not expect.
They cried.
They cried. Okay. They could not believe that us, we could, that this is happening. And I was so, it was like kind of reliving it all over again. Once we told our friends and family, and no one knew except for my mom, right? I think
your mom, her
mom. My mom was the only one that knew. No one else had any idea.
Yeah. How did your mom knew? Did she was she just so in tune with you that she could tell something was shifting?
Well, yeah,
or did you actually tell?
Well, a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And my mom sat us down and she was talking to us both, and we both trust my mom. She's my mom, but she was really an arbiter, sort of in between. Like, she felt like, I'm not picking sides.
I trust. I still love her. Yeah. I still.
That is so nice. You're so lucky to have that.
Yeah.
You
She's awesome. Yeah.
My mom's awesome.
So your mom was at least the rock that you could both go to and all of this. What was it like? You have to tell that story over and over when you start telling friends and family.
It was painful. For me, it was very painful. I think, looking back, it feels like, you know, you say that you don't remember your stages. Like, I'd love to not remember, but I think I probably cried every day. I was scared. I was lonely. There were times I'd go back to the house, you know, and I'd stay there for weeks and like, oh, I don't know if I should. And then I was like, okay, no, I should go back to my apartment.
Yeah,
so I just felt so torn. I just wanted to sleep. I just didn't want to be conscious, you know, and still have a young kid. And I remember Richard would say, oh, you know, Nick, what are you doing? You're checking out. Like, it took everything in me to just still function. Still get up and go to work and be there for my kid. And, you know, I was working on my doctorate. So I just decided that, because I started to get behind in school work, I just decided that I couldn't afford to extend the doctorate beyond what, you know, the 3 years. Like, I couldn't financially afford tuition. So I just like, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm just going to like just invest everything. In my schooling and then in my work. And I just thought that my work be an outlet, but it was just a struggle. Yeah, it was, you know, I think it just takes time. It takes a lot of time, you know, and I doubted, like, am I making the right decision? Am I not making the right decision? What's it going to be like in 5 years or in 10 years? Am I going to regret it? Am I going to look back? Like, and I still don't know if I have the answers to those questions. Like, I still don't know. Did I make the right decision? Should have we worked harder? Should we still be married? You know, like, you know, I don't know. And I just, all I know is today and this is what it is. And, you know, I just, at the time, that's how I felt. And I couldn't get out of this loop in my head. I didn't want to lie to myself. I didn't want to lie to Richard. But I also think, you know, and Richard knows, I think his reaction to it to me in some ways felt apathetic. So I felt like, well, he doesn't really care that I left. So it felt to me validating that I should continue to move forward. But I think also he expresses his emotions differently. So, and you're young and you're scared and you don't know. So it's just easy to kind of move on.
there are those five stages of grief mm-hmm. with death, and there are two more stages in divorce, and blame and forgiveness are two of those mm-hmm. other stages. Do you feel that you went through stages of grief, Nicole?
Oh, for sure.
It sounds like it, yeah. Was there ever any blame? But one of the biggest issues in divorce that people have to get over is blaming the other person. And I know that's hard depending on what it was. If it's an issue of, I just fell out of love, there's not huge blame. If there's drugs and alcohol, if there's other partners, mm-hmm. yes, there can be blame. And only when you stop blaming can you actually deal with one another. I mean, you two have been so wonderful in the time that I've known you. Did you go through any blame? Was there a reason to blame Richard for anything in your mind?
I don't blame him. If anything, I felt a tremendous sense of guilt because I initiated this whole process. And especially when you have a kid who doesn't understand, you know, and to this day, you know, wants us to be together. I mean, our daughter told me last night, Dad still loves you, you know?
which is true, I do.
Yeah.
I do
still. Yeah, so like, she doesn't understand. Well, if Dad loves you and you love him, why aren't you together? Like, she just, you know, so I no, there's no blame. You know, I blame myself. In a lot of ways, you know, if anything, I think we both could have done things differently, mm-hmm. but you can't go back, you know, and it's just been so long, and you start to just kind of get used to your lifestyle, and you start to accept, right? Because mm-hmm. it's easier to accept and move on, and so I don't have any blame, you know.
Good.
And we did I was going to say too on that, on the earlier comment, that we had check-ins,
mm-hmm.
especially when we started mm-hmm. to date.
Mm-hmm. I was going to go into that about other partners.
I think he had Richard.
I would have check-ins.
I didn't really get into dating.
So
I didn't want to shadow.
So I think for me, it was 3 years after we mm-hmm. had that conversation that it took me to date. Mm-hmm. So I didn't date anyone after 3 years. And I think Nick has been a little bit longer.
Yeah,
because we were not interested in dating.
No, I didn't want to shout. I just didn't want to cloud my confusion, create more confusion. Plus, you know, you're just, it's like after having a baby, you're just like so exhausted from it and drained.
You just said something so important, Nicole. You didn't want to cloud the issue.
Yeah.
And that's one of the issues when people immediately bring on other partners. Okay, so you have two different situations. You either have a marriage is breaking up because there's a third mm-hmm. person involved, mm-hmm. or there are no third people. You do break up because of internal issues, mm-hmm. and like in 5 seconds, mm-hmm. there's another partner, and that does cloud things because mm-hmm. that other partner is going to be part of the conversation.
Right.
So that was so important that you mm-hmm. said that is one of the reasons why you just mm-hmm. did not go there.
Yeah, no. Because there's part of me that still wanted my marriage to work. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a part of me that's like, God, we have such a great life together. You know, there's just so many things that were so positive that would just create more confusion.
How about for you? Mm-hmm. Was it the same reason you didn't date for 3 years because you were very much focused on the unfolding of the...
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I just, emotionally, I was not in the mood mm-hmm. to talk to anyone romantically, engage with anyone romantically at all. And I just was... processing the relationship. Mm-hmm. But Nick and I, as Nick mentioned, there were times we'd still spend time together. She'd mm-hmm. be at the house. So our lives were, we lived separately. They're still intertwined. And to mm-hmm. some extent, they still are intertwined. So I just was not in the mood to move on. Though I don't know that I defined it as not trying to deliberately cloud. I think emotionally, I just naturally just went there. Just was not interested. And friends would say, oh, you should go on mm-hmm. a dating app and date. I go, no, I'm not interested. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to see anyone. I'm just not, I don't want to do that.
I just felt too broken.
Yeah. So, and I had nothing to offer. Mm-hmm. I had nothing to really offer. So, because I hadn't moved on yet. Mm-hmm. So, there's really nothing for me to offer anyone if I dated. So, I just didn't do it.
Dang, this is so mature. I mean, mm-hmm. you really did the healthiest things for yourselves naturally. which is really impressive. Richard, did you go through some grief stages? Did you ever blame Nicole?
No. That's why I, in my mind, and even now, and I said before, why it was so brave of her to say that, because that takes guts. It really takes guts to have a conversation with anyone to say that this structure that we've had, I want to stop it. I wasn't thinking along those lines and that I would actually say, but when Nick said it was the right thing to say in the moment, because we needed to confront our relationship, and she was the one that brought it up. But I think as it relates to the grieving, I don't know that I went through and I deliberately classified, documented, and measured those stages. I definitely went through the stages of sort of grieving, which is why I checked in before I started to date to say, hey, Nick, are you sure you want to do this? Like, I'm going to start dating. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, I'm not rich. I think it's the right decision. So I started dating. Then I check in again. Are you sure you want to do this? Because now my relationship is getting kind of serious. She's like, no, I mean.
I didn't know. So I mean, I couldn't say 100%. You know, part of me is like, no, let's make it work. The other part of me is like, it's not fair, you know, to just kind of, it's been so long, to keep looping this. Like, there has to be a point where it's like, are you, because I remember like talking to my mom about it. Like, I need to either make a commitment to this marriage, or I need to make a commitment to move on from the marriage, but can't keep going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it really had been a couple of years. And so when he started to develop, I guess, feelings for someone else, then it was just like, you know, maybe that's just the path we need to be on and release with love, you know. And, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be, but release with love. So.
Did you go to therapy?
No.
No, we did not. No,
okay. Do you regret not going, or do you think it worked out just fine without it? Not for everybody, but for you.
I do, for sure. I've brought it up many times, yeah.
Oh, you think we should have gone?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What do you think would have been different had you?
Two things. I think either we would still be married today, or the closure of the marriage would have happened sooner and easier.
Okay. Are you surprised to hear her say this, Richard?
No, because that's a conversation we had before.
Have you?
Yeah. I brought it up.
Yeah, because as Nick kind of touched on this, so I was absolutely going to therapy with the mindset that the relationship might work. But as Nick said, it's like, well, I'm not going to commit, can't promise that, certainly not. But it was also, let's go see a therapist just to find closure. And I thought, well, we're two rational people. Mm-hmm. We can find closure without throwing down thousands of dollars to find closure. So we had that dialogue. And I think we actually were going to go, there was someone within my neighborhood that I grew up in, a pastor that was going to do marriage counseling before we got married. That never happened. I thought, even in hindsight, I wonder if that would have helped establish a little bit more of a foundation too. And it's obviously nice to be around people that you think are good people that can lend a hand in sort of a process, or lend a hand in understanding how couples move through the valleys in a relationship. And of course, they will absolutely happen. But what needs to be present to be able to move out of that? Mm-hmm. And you know, clearly, Nick and I didn't have that. We didn't have those tools to say our relationship is strong enough to move out of the valleys, because we essentially stayed there. And that's essentially why we're here talking to you. So we weren't equipped to be able to move past that and stay together.
Or just if somebody would have just said, this is typical of a marriage. Mm-hmm. Like, there's times when you feel this way and you'll get through it, you know. Or I ended up going to therapy just myself. Mm-hmm. So I just started to go myself because I was in a dark place. And I do remember the therapist saying, you know, the best therapy for a couple is just to rediscover each other again. Go on a date. Mm-hmm. Go out. And I remember saying to Rich, hey, you want to go on a date? Like, you know, nothing ever came of it. Because that was like, he was like, just go to dinner together. And then, you know, maybe it'll evolve into something else. But, so I just ended up going to therapy for myself. And then at some point I just thought, okay, I need to just kind of bring closure to this, because no need. I felt like we were both in purgatory.
Yeah. Yes.
So we need to get out of purgatory.
You mentioned when we first started talking for this this interview, soulmate, When you met Rich, you felt he was your soulmate. And I can completely relate to that. Did you feel that Nicole was your soulmate, Richard, or do you not relate to that concept?
The concept, no. We've talked about this. The soulmate thing, I don't really believe in that concept. There's so many stages in a relationship, which is a shared experience, and there's stages in your life which is not a shared experience. And it's just so many things can go on. And since we live in a tiny space relative to the world, I mean, you know, Nikki can move to Italy. She can go, I've never seen this guy before. Well, of course not. You've never lived here before. This is a fabulous relationship. And that could end. You can move on to the next one. Now you're in Spain. Oh, my God, it's a fabulous relationship. So, and sometimes it can be bits and pieces of a relationship that, oh, wow, if everyone was like this, then that would be great. But that does, there's, you have to learn to work with essentially what you've chosen to work with, both the recipient and the receiver. It's just, you know, not everyone's going to come to the table in your mind complete. There's going to be some stuff where someone's going to fall a little short. And in those short moments, if it's enough to carry the relationship. I think we may have talked about some of those concepts, I think, earlier on.
Well, in regards to the soulmate concept, I think when I met my now ex-husband in front of the hot dog stand on the midway of the circus, the very first day I was hired by the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus, this is exactly when we met. He was part of the 8-piece brass band, and I was a marketing director. And I never understood what soulmate meant. I really didn't. I didn't date a huge amount when I was in college. I had tons of friends, and I always worked in large groups of people. But when I met him, and I'd like you to share what your feeling was in a second and why you called Richard your soulmate, when I met him, it was like a knowing of the soul. It's the only way I know how to describe this. I felt like I knew him. I felt that I was already connected. So bear in mind, I wasn't an avid dater. So that was a very new experience for me. And then how do you, so first of all, let me just ask, is that how you saw Richard, or how did you come to say he was your soulmate, first of all?
I just had, you know, a deep love for him, and I didn't want to be with anyone else, and just being with him every day was just very exciting for me. So even accepting the great things about him and the things that annoyed me, you know, it's like...
Probably it is what it is. On the annoyed
yeah.
part.
So, yeah.
So now when it's time to have that conversation, when you're aware that things have changed and you've already identified him as your soulmate, did that make it even harder to come to the decision that maybe this isn't the right relationship forever?
Oh, yeah, it definitely makes it harder. And it probably is a little part of why I haven't really moved on into another serious relationship, because it's just, you know, I was young and I kind of grew up with him. You know, I said I met him at 22. So, you know, I grew with him and grew up with him and we grew together. And so, you know, I think it just makes it hard. But at the same time, you know, when you care about someone, you want them to be happy too. And I just didn't, there's a part of me is like, you know, I don't know that I could provide that level of happiness, especially if I'm having like these feelings of doubt.
Understood. Do you have anything to comment on that
before
answering? Okay, so now I want to ask the next question, introducing new partners. Are you seeing somebody right now, Nicole?
Very casually, yes.
Because I think you had mentioned it earlier. How did you, were the first one that had
started a date, yeah.
How did you introduce that? Are you still with that person?
No.
Okay. Did you introduce that first person to Nicole, or it wasn't that heavy a relationship to do that with?
Yeah, I think the uniqueness of that first person, I was actually, before I met Nick, I was actually hanging out with this person 25 years ago.
Isn't that funny how that
So that
happens.
Was just a unique, so they had already known each other, but if we were to exclude that part of the story, obviously, eventually the person met Nick again, And I forget this. I forget this. The setting.
Doug Cameron was doing a dance lesson, and I.
Okay. So she was in town, and she went to the dance lesson, and then and obviously Nick was there too. Mm-hmm. So that's when that introduction happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was it you knew it was going to happen? The introduction.
I went and I said hi and gave her a hug.
We always tell each other. We give each other a heads up, like, "Hey, this is so and so. You fine with it?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm fine with it." And
Okay, so now, how old is Cameron?
10.
She's 10 years old. Okay, so definitely age of reason.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been with the person you are now with, Richard?
Over a year.
And how did you introduce that person not only to Nicole but to Cameron?
So Cameron, I think we went to her house and we had like a lunch, something that was pretty chaste and innocent, not a time frame that was like, oh, let's spend the whole day together. Let's spend the next day together. It was something super brief just to give her exposure to Cameron. I knew her for a long time before she met Cameron. Just wanted to feel confident about the relationship, and I don't want Cameron to meet a lot of people. And Nick's the same way, you know. His relationships, they work, they don't work, they work, they don't work. And the ones that are short-lived don't ever need to meet my daughter, ever.
I'm the same way,
How did Cameron react?
She was fine, but Nick touched on this a little bit too. Cameron is fine with the dating. But she's not fine with the dating. She still has her in her mind a concept of family, which is more important than the people that they're dating. Like this is the first Christmas that we'll probably not spend
all
the normal Christmas all day together.
With the three of you?
With the three of us. And if we even exclude the pandemic, Cameron's thinking, oh, well, the person that dad is dating, she can come over for a little bit, but then she's got to go home because we're doing this family thing.
Yeah,
right.
And
then
I said, hey, you know, it's not always going to be like that. So she's getting used to it. And I think part of that in her mindset, that since, as Nick mentioned, we're Nick and our relationship is so good and we still hang out with our families, each still hang out together. Our friends will still hang out together. So it has a feeling that, oh, well, maybe one day my parents would get back together rather than not having a friendly marriage. And I'd never want to talk to her. We have problems when we do the handoff and the transition. And in her mind, it's firm. My parents do not like each other. But I'll come over, give Nick a hug and stuff. So it's just, I don't know if it's confusion. I think she's aware. I think Cameron just would prefer the family time, prefer that her mom and dad are together. So she puts the dating people in kind of another bucket.
Yeah.
It's not part of the family.
They're temporary.
They're temporary.
Yeah.
Oh, and do you live together?
No.
Okay.
No, with the girl.
Is that a conscious decision not to do that?
Yes, it is a conscious decision not to do that. Yeah. I'd have to be much farther along in the relationship to actually move in.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about for you, Nicole?
I've seen someone just very casually. I just feel like I'm at a really good place in my life where I'm enjoying my independence. And Cameron has met one other guy I've dated that I dated for a while, but that didn't work out. But I'm not interested in introducing her to this guy until I'm sure it's going to work out. And I don't even know if that's going to be the case. So, you know, I like to take it day by day. You know, I think that frustrates men. The men I meet want to like progressing's faster, and I move at a snail's pace in my personal life. I'm in first gear. My professional life, I'm in fifth gear, but in my personal life, I like to function in first gear.
You need a balance, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I tell Cameron, if I talk to him, you know, I'll say my friend, but I just focus on Cameron. I mean, 99% of the time it's Cam and I, and that's it.
You know, I have to say that you are a remarkable couple. You really are. You're so textbook about doing things well thought out, without animosity, and with the best interest of your daughter. I don't know that people who are in pain and sorting their emotions out while they're getting divorced, I don't know that they understand what putting their children first means, mm-hmm. and if they're in an emotional position to do that. Can you maybe speak to that? Because you've had friends mm-hmm. that have gotten divorced that are probably not yeah. like you or your journey, right?
Mm-hmm. I would say that you exactly said it. When you're in pain and you're confused, I think it's innate as humans to want to be with somebody else, you know, to maybe either try not to deal with those emotions and therefore kind of jump into something else. And maybe even make someone else hurt because you're hurting. And it does take a conscientious effort to just say, to remind yourself that, you know, why do I feel this way? Why? It's a lot of introspect and a lot of reflection, which is, you know, something I think I do quite often. Mm-hmm. But when you, you know, we have a child and we love our child so much. There is not another man on this planet that will ever be more important than her. And I, you know, I've even said to myself and even Richard, I probably won't be in another serious relationship till Cameron is in high school and independent. And maybe I will, but if it means that I won't, then the sense of selflessness for our child comes out in relationships being put on hold or, you know, moving in being put on hold or anything being put on hold, or even just like if Richard says or does something that annoys me, just whatever, let that go too. Because I want Cameron to grow up seeing a loving relationship, because that's the best thing we can give her, with not being together. Because mm-hmm. I want her to function in a normal marriage, hopefully one day herself, with whoever she chooses that to be with. And the only way that we can model that is just to be respectful and show the love between us. Maybe not we're not in love with each other, but it's important that she see that. And we're modeling behavior that we want her to have and treating each other like we want her to treat other people. And when you're upset and sad, like I would never speak anything negative about Rich. He does stuff and I think to myself, oh, Lord, you know, that's your father. But I go, well, you know, people respond differently. You know, he does it his way. I do it my way. You do it your way. That's just the best way for her. And I think people who are in pain and want to hurt their significant other or their person they're divorcing, forget about the child, you know, and yeah. you can't forget about your kid. If you don't have a kid, it's a different game. But if you have a kid, that's it. There's only one thing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Same thing for you, Rick.
Yeah, I wouldn't change a single word. The modeling the behaviors mm-hmm. is the goal. And there are some friends or people that I know that their divorces were just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stories of when the dad came to pick up the daughter's crying, didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. And the parents
horrible.
Literally get in a fight on the driveway mm-hmm. and everyone's crying. Mm-hmm. And even in those moments, what's interesting, there's an awareness, right? Mm-hmm. Nick just mentioned, there's an awareness that the parents are not making. And one parent thinks it's the fault of the dad. The dad mm-hmm. thinks it's the fault of the mom. And the kids are just sort of absorbing these behaviors. And no one is taking responsibility when the parents for themselves and their mm-hmm. own reactions. And they're projecting and it's just, they haven't grieved enough.
Yeah.
And there's always this other person that's always the worst. Mm-hmm. It's always them and they're always the worst. And this other person is always trying to find a friendly way to work with this other person that's always the worst. And they just never be able to move past it. I'm so glad that Nick and I are not in that situation. I think independently, our personalities are not that way either.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that does help us to be able to talk about, hey, we're having a difficult situation. Let's work through it. We're two rational people. We're not trying to win over the other one, trying to be fair and balanced.
Mm-hmm. Or manipulate the other one.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that foundation that we're like that as individuals, it helps us move through this a little bit easier than others. Yeah.
I think so too. Just in observing people and obviously observing myself, it depends on where the individual is in their own emotional evolution as an independent mm-hmm. person. And then you combine that as a person in a relationship. If that isn't mature, if you're not like solid in your mm-hmm. own mm-hmm. self, yeah, I think it's going to be much harder.
Yeah.
And I think that's like from my own personal journey, that's what I've tried to do is I say to yourself, I'm hurting, I'm grieving, I don't like how it feels. I need to work on myself before I jump into anything else. And that's what people have to do is, my mom would always tell me, you can't love anyone more than yourself, right? And so you really have to love yourself and be good to yourself and not hurt others to get to that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's easy. If something horrible had happened in the relationship with one of you, as it does with some other couples, maybe it would have taken more. Maybe therapy would have been absolutely necessary. But even if nothing has really happened, it is really easy to blame the other person for losing touch, for falling out of love, mm-hmm. I guess. And it's difficult, but I think it's the only way you can maintain control in your life is if you start with yourself. Mm-hmm. What can I do to improve myself? How am I feeling? Let's identify mm-hmm. the feelings, because we don't normally, mm-hmm. because we're expected to be super people, mm-hmm. aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even parents can feel bad. You know, for Cameron, that's interesting. Because you're not fighting, and more than likely, she knows of other friends whose parents fight, you're just different for her mm-hmm. than, or what we see on TV right. when people are divorcing. We see the worst. Mm-hmm. And so she's not used to that. So that is interesting with the signals.
Well, she mm-hmm. asked me the other day, am I going to get married again? I go, I don't know, maybe. Maybe I'll meet someone and mm-hmm. I'll fall in love and I'll get married. And she's like, oh, there's somebody out there for you, Mom. I mean, so she kind of is smart enough to kind of rationalize it.
Right. But still.
I just said, but I'm not, like, that's not a priority for me, Cam. That's just not important to me right now. So if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But just know I'm happy. So she knows.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what have you each learned about yourselves and are proud of in this journey over the last few years to identify that the relationship probably should change until now?
Yeah.
I think I'm always a person who's like three steps ahead. I always liken it to playing chess. I'm that way in my work world too, just thinking a few steps ahead. Planning everything, like planning, this is when I'm going to get married, this is when I'm going to have a kid, this is, and it gets to a point to where you just can't plan anymore, and my future is very black, and that was scary for me.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because I imagined that Rich and I were going to be rocking on these rocking chairs, and we're 88 years old, and traveling the world, and mm-hmm. doing all these things, and all of a sudden, I can't see that anymore, so it's like, I feel like I just literally can't see what the future is going to be in my personal life. Where am I going to live? Who am I going to be with? Am I going to be alone? But for me, the journey has helped me learn to just be okay with being with myself and not feeling a fear. There was a point of time, I don't know if Rich knows this, but there was a point in time I was talking to one of my really good friends where I went to her house every day after work, probably for like 2 years. Like I just mm-hmm. couldn't be alone. So I would go to her house, whether I had a camera or not, and I would go to her house for dinner for a glass of wine until it was time to go to bed. And then I would go to my apartment because it just was so so hard to be alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember I was telling her that, you know, I thanked her like for just having that support. Yeah. But now I love being alone. I love going on walks alone. And so I guess what I've learned is that it's okay to be alone. It's okay to just be in the present and not worry about the future.
That's a great lesson to learn, because being alone is the hardest thing for so many people.
How about you?
Yeah, yes, I haven't thought about that, actually. Rather than saying, what have I learned? I'm thankful that Nick and I are able to get along the way that we do, mm-hmm. not only for us individually, but also for Cameron and to the extension our friends and our family members. But I haven't really sat down and thought about what I've learned. I mean, I was cautious, and not cautious, I was very thoughtful about us getting married the first time. And now I'm cautious about getting married again and really, you know, think about the institution of marriage. Why do I need to do that? Mm-hmm. You know, does it mean success? Clearly it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And when people are in love, they want to naturally see a progression in our society. One way to affirm that is to get married. That shows that another level of commitment. Doesn't mean it's going to guarantee anything, but I think I'm just more cautious. And I think sometimes my thinking can be more risk-oriented and risk management. And just be, okay, wait, who's around me? Who are you? Mm-hmm. What's going on? You know, before I let you into my emotional, physical mm-hmm. space, you need to be vetted. Mm-hmm. I need to vet you first. And maybe I'm more in that space. And sometimes I talked to Nick about it. And she said, Rich, you know, let go of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and so maybe, I don't know that that's something I've learned. I've just maybe changed my behavior in that way, because this didn't work, so I'm not going to jump in anything else because mm-hmm. I don't need to. But yeah, I probably have to take a couple of steps back to really think about what I've learned from this. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know what's interesting, just from my own experience going through divorce, I really don't like talking to people about what's going on in my personal life. Mm-hmm. I would rather process it and deal with it. So what I wasn't ready for was after the divorce was final. So I accepted it, and we were very nice to each other, worked through it. It was about a year. It was very sad. And I went to work every day. It was a demanding job. And then I walked every night. I was like Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. I just walked every night, which was very healthy to do.
Yeah.
So that was great. And I thought, okay, the divorce is final. This is great. It's over. I can move on. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Once the divorce is final, I sign off on the paperwork, all of that job has mm-hmm. just been completed. That was a job. Mm-hmm. You know, even though it's not the most complicated thing to do paperwork-wise, as you know, you've just been through it, it's still something you have to pay attention to and tend to until it's over. Now that's done. There are no more decisions to make about that. You have to now resolve that. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't ready for it. All of a sudden, okay, that's over. I go to work every day. And I was in entertainment, so I was around happy events and happy people. I went home. It was about 3 months. I just sat on my sofa quietly. I didn't put TV on, and I'm a TV junkie. Mm-hmm. I just sat quietly. And I think about 3 months, all of a sudden, this cloud was lifted. And I just quietly processed. Mm-hmm. And so I say to people, I'm sharing with you now, that you may still go through another stage mm-hmm. because all of the work you had to do is now set aside. And now you have to go on with the business of living.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, and along those lines, about next stages, I wonder if one of us did get remarried, if that would be like, oh, this got remarried, or it's like, yeah, whatever, I don't really care. And they got remarried.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that, us inching in that sort of respect and understanding that that could happen, is dating someone seriously. So me meeting someone that Nick is dating, or mm-hmm. Nick meeting someone that I'm dating, because that for us means, okay, this is not some casual thing. This is a little bit more serious. Cameron has met mm-hmm. this person. And since, I mean, I know I've gone through that process, because I've been asked in relationships, oh, how are you going to react if, you know, Nikki starts dating someone seriously and then you introduce this person? I go, mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what's supposed to happen. Like, are you sure? I go, yeah, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Because we talked about it enough. So I figured out on my own how that's going to make me feel, rather than being jealous. Mm-hmm. I can't believe you're with this guy, you know, and have some old arguments resurface. Some reason, but
and I feel like we have some agreements just yeah. because, like, my parents are divorced, and you know, not to get into that, but like, you know, my stepdad wasn't probably the nicest to my dad. But I think that it's just important that whoever Richard's with or whoever I'm with is accepting of the fact that we do have a friendship, mm-hmm. which we talk about has been an issue in some of the relationships.
Has it?
Oh, yeah, the last guy I was with is like, that's just weird. I'm like, no, actually, you're weird for thinking mm-hmm. it's weird, but yeah, and that, you know, like, I can't. The perfect relationship for me is to be with a man who is so confident in himself that he doesn't have to worry about my friendship with Richard, can be amicable with him mm-hmm. as well, and obviously is going to treat my daughter amazingly. So, right. So those are important things. And, you know, I think that's probably some of the chinks in the chain in terms of me finding the right guy is, you know, just them buying into that. And that's just really important to me because I'm not going to be shut off from my child's father. So, you know, it would be nice to be able to hang out all together. I've seen that happen. You know, that to me is like the gold standard, but, you know, at least have to be respectful and amicable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah.
You too, I guess.
My relationship with Nick has been, with others, it has been a challenge for others because it's typically, that's just so weird.
Mm-hmm. That you're so nice to one another. So isn't that something that being nice is so weird?
I'm sure they
think
that I'm like, you know, trying to
get him back, make him jealous by having somebody else.
I try my hardest to be really open when I meet the girlfriend, just like, hi, you know, just very open and respectful of their space. And I'm not going to get in the way.
Yeah.
It is unusual that you are this friendly and nice with one another. It's unusually wonderful. I mean, I love it being in the position I'm in to see this.
It's an evolution. Like for me personally, I really just feel like life is not expected in terms of who knows when we go, right? And and it just, my intent every morning is just to make it the best and the most positive and just push all the negativity away. And that has to do with a lot of how you think and how you react. And it's just evolving and growing. And I wasn't always that way. I mean, Richard was married to me. He knows. Mm-hmm. Was not always that way. But it's been a journey for me personally, just in terms of like, oh, you know, if you're going to be negative, then I just don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. So it's just letting everybody find their happiness and not judging that.
This kind of touches on the last question I wanted to ask both of you, and that would be words of advice to people listening who are embarking on their evolution out of the marriage. Words of advice?
I mean, one thing is, I guess the way you phrase the question, out of the marriage, I guess part of it is that as a couple, they figure out what they need to do to affirm that is the right decision that they should be making before they actually get to the point where they actually say, okay, we're done. We've gone down that. Now let's actually get a divorce. After that, the advice I think is something that Nick said, and I agree with it, is through this process, if they have kids, our kids are the most important part. Mm-hmm. Them staying positive about themselves, them being positive about relationships, and then being positive about the mother and the father. And if they do their best, if they are going to have an argument privately, if possible, that's really the advice. I think kids first, and then obviously before they actually get a divorce, make sure that that's indeed the right decision, to make. But after that, kids first and try to be friendly. I think after that, I mean, I think it's just, you know, trying to be independent and, be retrospective and look within. And don't always assume that your way and your behavior and your response is actually the right one. And certainly if you find yourself referring to other people as the force of wrong, and it will, you probably need to look in the mirror because you definitely contributed to it in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, it's not completely isolated to just one person. So that would be my two cents.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have people, mostly colleagues, that come to me who are considering divorce or are complaining about their spouse. And the first thing I say is make that shit work. Like figure it out. Cause it's not easy, you know, uncoupling, right? It's not easy going through divorce. So take all the time you need to really be sure that that this is not like a long-term thing. It could be just a very temporary isolated moment in time. And if you get to the point to where you feel like, you know what, it is better and healthier to move on, then really just focus on yourself, understand your feelings, and remember that it is temporary because the pain feels so raw and so hard. You feel like it's never, ever going to end, but it does. It takes time, obviously, but it does. It does. And I think if you just spend time, like you said, Judy, walking every night, I walk a lot too. I walk every morning almost, but if you just spend time with yourself, before you try to bring others into your sphere of influence, then you're going to get to that point of healing much faster. And like Richard said, first and foremost, if you do have children, they have to be the priority before yourself. And so you have to be prepared to be very, very selfless. Selfless in not being able to do certain things, activities with your friends, or, you know, like you watching Cameron, well, I want to do something and vice versa. You know, sometimes you have to miss opportunities or events, et cetera. And that's okay. You know, those events will come up again, but your kid has to be the priority. And if you do that, you'll feel better about yourself. I really do think you will. Because people, we all know when that little voice tells you you're not doing the right thing, listen to it. And if you want to really feel good about yourself, then make others come first before you selfishly make decisions.
That was really beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And thank both of you for being here. Mm-hmm. I've not had a couple do the exit interview before. You are the very first couple. I've had several of these interviews, but just with one person.
Oh, okay.
And so for me,
I
just love listening to both of you talk. Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much, and I'm sure every one of the listeners has learned too, because you are a result of your own intentions. Mm-hmm. Sitting here today, you are the result of your own intentions. Mm-hmm. And your intentions were to be good to one another, and to make this the best for your child.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And with intention comes success. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for helping us get through it.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
My pleasure. And thank everybody for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel. You can reach me with any questions, comments, or ideas for shows through my email, Judith at amicabledivorceexpert.com. I just changed my email for the show. Judith at amicabledivorceexpert.com. I look forward to having you in our next episode. Take care, everybody.